So previously I said that we would wrap up the anxiety topic today fairly quickly, I think, and then we'll try to get through as much about depression as possible. I changed my mind with that, so instead what we're going to do is take all class today to wrap up talking about anxiety, and then we're going to do a recorded class here at the building. This is Saturday, October 4th. Maybe we should put Saturday on there, which is 2 weeks from yesterday. The men's book club is at 9, and then I'll just hang around and then afterwards do a 10:30. In other words, it'll be a class. You can come to it. If you don't want to come to it and you want to listen to it, just listen to the recording because we're going to put it on the website. So it's, instead of me recording in my basement with no humans around, then we'll do that. So that's what and I'll get through the material on depression then, and so wrap up that. So people with both quarters are going to be invited to the October 4th thing because people, I got a feedback from someone last quarter saying, I wish we talked more about depression. So I was like, okay, well, we can invite people from that class too. If you can't come, you can just listen to the recording. So that's the idea. Okay, so to review, because it's been a week and a half, I think it's worth saying some of these things. Again, we have three potential paths when we talk about kind of our daily like mental focus and anxiety. Do you remember what we said about these three paths? It doesn't matter which one's the left or the right.
You want to be in the middle one.
What's that?
You want to be in the middle one.
You want to be in the middle one? That is correct. Don't be in the middle path. That's right. So it doesn't really matter what the if you make it the left or the right, because there's nothing significant about that. What's one of the paths that is a good path?
Actively dropping it.
Actively dropping it. Yeah, let's have that there. So really letting it go, letting yourself get clarity. You will think better later. You will think better if you can pick this up later on, choose faith over fear, move forward, dropping it by actively moving forward, even moving your body, doing the next thing, that kind of thing. Do you remember what then the right path is, which is another good path? Instead of actively dropping it, you are actively doing productive things, right? Journaling, talking with people, purposeful prayer, doing active, active legitimate things. And then what's in the middle that you want to avoid? Unproductive things like?
Worry.
Very good. That's probably the catch-all word, worry. But what else might we put in that box? The mushy middle, anxiety. So the unproductive, mushy middle road of anxiety. It feels productive, but it's not. It's not dropping. It's not active. It includes ruminating, problem solving, replaying it, right? I'm lying there in bed, replaying that stupid thing I said over and over again. Maybe if I replay it one more time, it won't exist. No, it's still there. Is it just as bad as it? Oh yeah, it's still just as bad. See, I'm checking. I'm mentally checking it. I'm replaying it. Worrying, anxious habits, seeing how I feel, seeing how I felt, trying to plan ahead of how I will feel, any of those things. Trying to remember what you were thinking, figuring things out, etc. The middle road is what we tend towards. Our flesh, our brain pushes us back to the middle road all day, every day, right? That's what we tend towards. And then remember what we said about percentage? What percentage of our day do we want to be doing the middle road? Zero. Okay. What percentage of our day do we want to be actively dropping it? 99% of the time, right? And then, oh, that's funny. This there. Okay. So, and then 1% in the productive things. Now, it could be 5%, whatever. But you get the idea. It's limited and purposeful with that. Okay. Do you guys remember that a little bit, talking about that? Okay. So I think that's pretty helpful. Any stories of victory the past week and a half after we've talked about this of you guys deciding to do some of these things? Any stories of failure? Abject, absolute failure. I tried to drop it. I couldn't. I wasn't productive. I just worried all day. Yeah, Miriam?
Well,
I have a friend, a very dear friend, who I had called when I was really going through a dark time. And she said, what's the worst thing that could happen? And I said what I thought. And she said, I knew you'd say that. Now you have to give that to God.
Mm-hmm.
And I just broke down in tears because I realized I was still trying to fix it.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
fix
yes.
Fix it myself.
Yes.
And I couldn't. So that was the best advice I've ever had.
Yes.
On anxiety and worry.
Yeah, so pray about it. That's active, purposeful. Mm-hmm. But then I'm going to do something else, right? Mm-hmm. Well, and we'll kind of talk about some of this today. Okay, anxiety wants to avoid, shrink back. To grow out of it, we need to confront the fear, to stand our ground, even if that's just in our heart. We talked about shrinking back before. So we talked about finding growth through exposure. In other words, instead of running from it, I'm going to let it exist. And that could be praying about it. That could be letting it go, dropping it, active exposure there. Talk about passive exposure, which is just allowing thoughts to come. A figure that resonates with a lot of people is in anxiety and trauma. I'm trying to keep thoughts from coming up, and so it's like you're holding beach balls under the water, right? I'm trying to like force these things under. I don't want to think about them. But that takes a lot of energy to keep all these beach balls under the surface. And then when I rest, oh, it popped up. No, I'm not allowed to think about that. So I'm like popping it, you know, pushing it down again. Well, the passive exposure is sometimes just letting thoughts come. And I'm just let those beach balls come and pop up. And thankfully, then they'll hang out for too long. But then they'll eventually drift off into the ocean, right? And that's good. It might, you know, kill a sea turtle out there or something. But eventually it'll drift off, and that's the goal, right? So passive exposure is very important for training, for skill building. It helps the other more aggressive methods be potent. ERP is what you would consider, or various things of kind of direct exposure, kind of in your face. It's very painful, very difficult, and you can talk about some best practices with that, but you also get results amazingly fast from that. Then scaffolding is building up little by little, increasing engagement, teaching your brain to calm down. And these are not one or the other. You may want to use all three. With most of the guys that I talk to, we start by doing some skill building with passive exposure and then build on top of that. Do you remember the example we used? Again, I know it's been a while, but remember the example we used of scaffolding, of a person with a big fear and how to help that person grow in their fear?
Somebody getting on the subway.
Yes, right. So we're using good old New York illustration. Your best friend in New York City witnesses something violent on the subway. Now he is terrified of using the subway. And it's not going to work. He needs the subway to get to his job. He's, you know, this is not going to be a good thing long term, right? So what might a scaffolding approach look like? We talked about the three steps of that, but even if you don't remember the three specific steps, do you remember what our general approach was to a scaffolding method to help him grow in that?
It's almost like a desensitization.
It absolutely is. Yeah, I mean, that is completely what it is. What were some of the practical things we talked about in that? Desensitization.
Across from the opening to the subway.
That's right. So it could be you are sit close by. Oh, that's even too much. Well, then we can do something else. We even said you could just sit in your apartment and draw pictures of the thing, right? But then you don't put those pictures away as if they're dangerous, because they're not dangerous. You draw those pictures and then you actually tape them to the wall so that they hang out. And again, this kind of desensitization. Good. Do you remember what the first step is with scaffolding?
The baseline.
You establish the baseline, right? So, and it doesn't matter where it is. It is where it is. It is what it is, right? What's the starting place to build on with that person, with the situation? Can they stand on the steps going down? Can they do that for 5 minutes, for 3 minutes, or 10 minutes? Can they sit in the park bench across, right? Can they sit in their home and draw pictures? And whatever it is, establish where they're at, and it's okay. It kind of doesn't matter where they're at, because that's their current situation. But then we're going to build on that. So you establish the baseline, and it doesn't matter where that is. And then the idea with scaffolding then is, once you've established the baseline, then you are building on it, right? So you build little by little. You slowly do more and more.
three more minutes the next week. And by the way, I don't mean you're just doing this once a week. That wouldn't be frequently enough to really help your brain calm down about it. But you might do it for 5 minutes every day, and then the next week you add, so then it's 8 minutes every day, or you know, something like that. And the next minute's 11 minutes. Next week it's 11 minutes every day, that kind of thing. 5 minutes more the next week from the park bench to the steps, from the steps to going underground, right? Consistency is key. People that have social anxiety say that church is hard for them. I think I said something like this last time. If church is what's hard for you, well, that's only like a 2-3 time a week thing. That may not be enough to calm down the anxiety. And so you might need to do something more other days of the week to kind of be utilizing that for the desensitization to occur. So consistency, commitment, do the exposure 6 days a week. Hey, this is only gonna work with people committed to growth, right? If a mom were to call me and they say, my teenage son has OCD, I want you to help him. Okay, well, does he want to be helped? That's the question. I can't make him do the homework, right? I can talk to him every week, but unless he's willing to do the homework, it's not gonna be a point. Just like my kid wants to learn the piano. Well, is he willing to practice? So I can talk with him once a week about how to play the piano, but he's gonna have to put in the practice, right? So working with kids is better. Working with your 4-year-olds, 5-year-olds, 6-year-olds is great because you can make it fun. You can be committed to doing those kind of exposures, you know, kind of with them. And then supplement things like reward, right? Rejoice together, celebrate those victories, acknowledge those things. Maybe a coupon for someone who's older, maybe a coupon twice a month to get a free pass, no questions asked, you know. And so you're telling your kid, we're going to the subway, we're going to sit there, and but even though we're going to do that for 15 minutes starting 6 days a week, you do get a coupon twice a month, no questions asked, you can get out of it for the day, you know. Gives them some freedom and some autonomy, you know, with that. Okay, so finding growth through exposure. Even better than just tolerating the fear, it's best to lean into it. When you're exposing yourself, you're not trying to run away from it, you're kind of hitting it head on, right? Really show it who's boss. Instead of letting anxiety push you out of your body, because that's not how God made us, we don't want to be all up in our head with the wheels spinning and not grounded and comfortable in our bodies. Lean in, be grounded in your body. That really helps. In a lot of ways, that's where we come to the problem with the consequences of anxiety is when I'm not in my body, those things can be at work. That's not good. It's pretty obvious that this exposure approach is the opposite of the world's current obsession with avoiding the things that bring anxiety. And this is where we wrapped up, or maybe I very quickly started going last class. But the current model and so much of therapy is to avoid the stuff that makes kids anxious, and it's just not helpful. So sadly, avoiding the thing that we fear only reinforces the fears and only strengthens the fear. We're making it our brain, oh, it is real. I do need to avoid that. Lynn Lyons is really good. She's not a believer, although her material is just for the most part excellent. It's not 100% great, but for the most part excellent. She's not a believer. One mom, I recommended her podcast, and she emailed me. She said, Lynn Lyons should be a believer. All of her stuff is so, you know, good. But. So she talks about this. The current psychology literature is making this mistake. So advice to school counselors, that there's a kid who's anxious being at school. So what you need to do is help them. Don't give them anything unexpected. When they show up at school, the guidance counselor should meet them at the car, walk them through the school, bring them to the classroom. What are you teaching the kid? You gotta have help. And?
You can't do it on your own.
Can't do it on your own. And how scary and real is school?
Especially when the adults are showing you that.
Yeah.
It's really scary.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, she'll read these, you know, the directives being given to school guidance counselors. She's a licensed therapist for it. And she's like, no, that's the worst. You need to teach them. You can do this. You can walk from the car in the classroom. Now, it may be hard, but we're going to work on that. We're going to build on that. And instead of kind of more of a coddling, they're not trying to be coddling, but they're trying to be helpful, obviously, but it just isn't helpful. And, you know, I think that the life, we've said this before, the lifestyle of 200 years ago, that makes you move forward. I can't lie in bed
depressed all day because the cows are literally mooing at me to go milk them. You know, I can't overly focus if this fence is okay. I threw the fence back up. I gotta go do the next thing. Those things help our anxiety. I don't mean that there wasn't anxiety, but those kind of lifestyle things help when you are forced to move forward, forced to drop, as opposed to today, our lifestyle, I think, tends to make our anxiety worse and to feed it. We have desk jobs, we sit there thinking all day, we're not moving our bodies. I have the ability to sit there and worry and rethink and all of that. Okay, so this is different if, literally last night, one of the guys I talked to, he's a college student in another state, he has OCD, and his homework was that he needs to put some of the words that he's constantly troubled by. He has to put those words on a piece of paper. I told him to type it out and put it on your wall of your room and tape it there so that it is there. He can't run from those words anymore. I said, you have to take a picture of it and send it to me. And good for him. Like 5 minutes later, I get this text. He wrote it on a piece of paper. He taped it to his wall and sent me a picture. It's like, don't run from those words. Put those things there, right? When we run from it, we run from that situation. I don't want to see that person. I don't want to talk to that person. We just kind of make it worse, and it builds in our mind. That task, what happens to that chore we don't want to do? We put it off. Is it growing or shrinking in our mind? It's growing, right? So all that, it's kind of the same principle there. Okay. Clicker stopped. So fear doesn't really exist outside ourselves. That's helpful to remember, right? Fear is just our imagination trying to protect us. You know, the fear isn't real. Fear is the subjective experience, right? And God gives us fear for good purpose. In fact, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. You know, we want to fear God, but that's a proper thing to fear, proper thing to have a developed, wise fear about, as opposed to being controlled by my fears in an ungodly, unwise way. Fear is just in our imagination. It's just trying to protect us. My clicker really did die. So the problem is when our imagination, trying to help us out, isn't pushing us in the right direction, right? Or our conscience. Conscience is trying to help you out, but if it's not trained, it's not going to be good. You know, you think you need to be praying to Mother Mary. Well, that's your conscience pushing you not in a good direction, right? And what's really hard, and this is what a lot of people don't get, is the more anxious we are, the less rational we are. And so you want to help someone who's really anxious, and you're like, well, they're just not listening. They're just not rational. Well, yeah, duh. Like, that's exactly what's going on. And so we help them. We love them. We serve them. We try to move them forward. And sometimes you just have to be wise and creative because their thinker isn't working so good, right? They are less rational about what's going on. So what that means is that some of the biggest progress that we make is going from that I believe I need to worry about this, right? It's my job to, right? As a good Christian, as a good mom, as a good student in college, whatever it is, thinking like I need to be anxious, I need to worry, I need to be problem solving, I need to stay in the middle road. In fact, you may feel conscious about it. That's my job to stay in that middle road. And once you realize, wait a second, no, that's not good, that's not helping. Wow, I need to stop problem solving, that doesn't help. I'm not thinking rationally. I need to drop this. I'll be more rational later. I really will make a better decision for the Lord after I drop this for a couple days and come back to it. That's huge progress, because a lot of times we're in the middle road, we're stuck in the middle road, because that's what I think I need to do. Maybe that's what how mom handled her stress, and that's what I think a good Christian, their life looks like. But to realize, oh, actually, I don't need to do that. That's not helping me. That's keeping me from being as rational. When we can make the progress, whoa, that panic that came, I don't need to listen to that. I'm just going to keep moving forward. I'm not going to be thinking right at all when I'm panicking like that. Okay, who here has heard the phrase, step into the fear and it disappears? Ever heard that phrase? Okay, well, it's true, kind of, sort of, not really. Okay, step into the fear and it disappears is ultimately true. It just takes a while, and it's awful. It is miserable. Whether it's directly confronting the fear, having that conversation, prayer journaling about what's bothering you,
Those things are very difficult, and it takes a while. It doesn't just calm down immediately. So when people glibly say, step into the fear and it disappears, they're imagining a fantasy world where I'm nervous about giving this public speaking, you know, I'm kind of nervous about getting in front of, but then I made myself get up, and by the end of the speech, it was awesome, and I stepped into fear, and then halfway through my presentation, all my fear melted away. Okay, that's a fantasy world, right? That's not reality. So if you ever hear anyone say that, you're like, okay, there is a sense in which you step into the fear and it disappears, and it rhymes, so it must be true, right? It's kind of true. It just takes a while, and it's awful. So there's, I just don't feel like overall, that's a fine expression as long as you understand the process. It takes a lot of courage to directly address our fears. And one of the things we really learn is to wait on the Lord when we're tackling anxiety. This is one of my favorite verses for anxiety, Hosea 12:6. So you, by the help of your God, return, hold fast to love and justice, and wait continually for your God. That's what we're learning to do. When I'm overwhelmed with depression, I'm overwhelmed with anxiety, I'm going to have to wait for God, because this isn't going to be fixed in 5 minutes. It's not going to be fixed in 5 days. It'll be better, God willing, in 5 days. I would think especially, for sure, I have confidence it'd be better in 5 weeks, but it's going to be really hard. And so waiting for God, and just keep doing the hard things, and wait continually for your God. I think it's a really encouraging thought. So because it's so miserable to confront our fears, we need encouragement to keep going when it's super rough. Same thing for addiction, same thing for depression, right? We're going to need encouragement because those things are really difficult. Two good words. When your kids are tackling these things, not just true for kids, but if you were helping your kids through this, compassion and confidence. Compassion. I know it's hard. This is awful. It's really difficult to be brave every day and confront your fears and to keep going to school or keep whatever it is, right? But confidence, they can do it. Like, this is miserable, but man, you've got it in you. And we're here to help you. We're here to encourage you. And really show them that confidence that they can do that. Of course, it's true for adults as well. They need compassion and confidence. But those two words, compassion and confidence, was basically advice that some friends of ours, whose daughter, daughter around Rosie's age, right, preteen, was going through OCD, going through counseling, and they say, Give that daughter lots of compassion, lots of confidence, you know, that she can do it. She can go through this. Okay, so we covered this weeks ago, right? The child comes to her dad. Daddy, I'm scared about going to Florida because I read in a book about an alligator that crawled through a screen door in Florida and almost ate a family. And Grandpa's house has a screen door. Okay, remember we talked about that? So, we talked about that when they're in that place of fear, a more rational, you know, that's almost statistically impossible. You know, that only happens like once or twice a year. And that probably won't be us. Is that going to be a helpful response? Right? No. Right? You know that they're in a place of fear. And so a lot of times rational answers aren't going to be helpful at all. Right? So what's a helpful response? Well, talking about the alligators, discussing possibilities, this tensile strength of screen doors, all of that is not going to be helpful, right? The issue isn't the content. It's not really about alligators, right? Addressing the content won't help. This isn't about alligators. There's no point in talking about alligators. Stay out of the alligators, right? So don't get wrapped up when you're talking to a kid or whatever about just oh, well, what they need is more conversations about alligators. That's not really the issue, right? So here I think would be a good response. You can acknowledge it on some level, of course, depending on where they're at in the stage of where you're bringing them through. But sweetie, I can tell you're really scared. Here, come sit by me, right? So you're acknowledging it, you're not dismissing it, but at the same time, we're not gonna have an extended conversation about alligators. It might feel scary to go to Florida, but you know what? I have to do scary things in my life too. You know, just this morning, and you tell them a story about how you have to do scary things, right? You're normalizing life involves doing scary things, right? And I worry about this or that. Remember how Grandpa, you know, he never wanted to fly, but then he flew eventually and it was just fine, you know, all that. So you're normalizing that. We have to do scary things. Life involves that. And then, so we're just gonna have to trust in God with this. God's good. We really can trust him. And what's helpful about responses like that are there's just not a good response to that. You know, when you say we're going to have to trust in God with these kind of things, we're going to say, well, no, I don't want to trust in God. You know, I mean, obviously they could say that. But the point is that there is that doesn't open up a door for argument like, well, but sweetie, I know you read that in a book about alligators, but I just don't think that's going to happen to us, whatever. No, you know, life is scary, life is hard, but we can trust in God. God is good, you know? And so I think that's a more of a helpful response. Does that make sense? So you do want to have wisdom of, you don't want to overly address it and just talk about alligators and talk about screen doors. But you also don't want to be dismissive to a child, like as if they didn't, they don't feel like they're being heard either. That's not going to be helpful, right? Mom won't even listen to me. Mom doesn't even know about how dangerous the alligators are. I need to talk to Dad instead, because Dad's going to get, you know. And so the point is that they don't, to just dismiss them doesn't help them move forward either, right? So what is she wanting? Well, what's our words? She wants to feel better. She wants comfort. She wants certainty and control. Those are the three C's of anxiety, right? She wants comfort. She wants certainty and control. Well, you can offer some comfort and different levels depending on where you're at in helping your child. But certainty and control, while there we need to learn, we're not going to have absolute certainty, right? We're not going to have absolute control, right? She wants to hear from you, alligators won't eat us in Florida. But that's just actually not going to be as helpful as you think, right? Because, well, how do you know? I mean, how do you know, right? And that's...
She has evidence that they ate somebody.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Yeah. I remember the story we told about the kid who was afraid of burglars, so the parents spent all the money, you know, $40,000 on the home security system, only for her to watch a Mission Impossible movie and realize, oh, that can be broken into. So then that didn't comfort her, you know? And so that those things aren't what would be better to have a conversation about, like, we can trust in God, these things are hard, but we'll do this together, and you know, offering more wise counsel to help along the way, not blowing $40,000 on something that then wasn't even helpful for her anxiety, right? She thinks that's going to make her feel better, right? I want you to tell me alligators won't eat us. But that's actually not going to be what helps her to feel better. She's reassurance seeking, right? But it doesn't help, because it'll be robbers the next night and rabies the next night, right? First robbers, then rabies, then it's going to come back to the alligators, you know, whatever it is, right? So the reassurance seeking, and be wise about that. The goal is not to come down with a hammer, but to see where they're at and try to help them through, right? Our faith in God really does help us learn to drop things. Once I realize, oh yeah, that's the goal. The goal is to drop this. I'll come back to it later. I'll pray about it later. But right now, I've already prayed about it, so I'm going to move forward, right? And our faith in God, that God heard my prayer, God's on the job, he works on these things, he cares about me, he's in control. That helps us learn to drop things. So we can relax, we can let go, because we really can trust in God. So some easy first steps to take, just kind of along these lines. Start scheduling time daily to prayer journal about the things that cause you anxiety. If you're saying, I kind of have a daily anxiety thing, well, make time every day. Remember, consistency is the key. So make time every day, 15, 20 minutes, to prayer journal specifically about the things that are causing you anxiety, right? Specifically about those things. Confront them. Don't, when you write that down, don't go and hide that piece of paper. Those ideas can't hurt you. Use the same notebook every day, so you're coming back to the same notebook, you know, that kind of idea, right? Make a list of all the things you can drop. So you're like, well, this keeps bothering me, but I've settled that. But it's this issue over here. Well, you told me that's settled. So now you know when that issue comes back to your mind, you can drop that. That's good drop practice, because you just told me that that's something that should be settled. Now, it doesn't feel settled when it comes back, but that'll be a good one for you to practice on dropping, and then we'll be working towards, you know, these other things. Look for avoidant behavior. Are there places I'm avoiding? Are there things I'm avoiding? People I'm avoiding, right? Those kinds of things. Keep staying out of the middle road. Oh, I'm back in the middle road. I need to drop it. I'll do something active and productive later, but for right now, I need to drop it. Find someone encouraging to talk to, right? If if there was a therapist who was trained in, you know, cognitive behavioral therapy, which for the most part is helpful, sometimes they can be a little extreme about, no, we're not going to talk about that. You know, that's just reassurance seeking. I'm not going to co-compulse with you on this. No, we're not going to talk about it. Well, no, I think God's word's a little bit wiser with that. There's a place for talking, even if that has a reassurance piece of it, as long as then we're going to follow that up with dropping it. As long as we're going to follow that up. So find someone encouraging to talk to about these things. And then afterwards, try to take that wise advice, right? Purposefully pray and then move forward. Ask yourself, what would faith look like in this situation, right? So what we don't want to do is pray about it, but then I'm just as anxious as I was before. No, how can I pray about it and then move forward, right? What would faith look like in this? And maybe faith looks like, I'm going to have to pray about this again in a couple hours, right? Okay, but then in between that time, do what you can to move forward and do the next thing there. Notice have to feelings, right? I have to do this, or it has to be this certain way. Like a bully voice kind of controlling you, controlling your life. Notice have to sentiments or else, right? Or else is like, I got to do this or else there'll be doom, right? So notice that. I need to hold on to this thing. Abby and I were talking last week about someone who very strongly felt like, I need to collect these things. They're usable later. Don't throw that away, you know? Most hoarding mentalities are connected to anxiety and are going to have some of this kind of stuff going on. I have to do this. If I throw this away, something bad's going to happen. I better keep this or else, you know, it's a bad idea. Be content with small growth. This is so helpful for people really in the pit with addiction, depression, anxiety. If my goal may only be to be a little bit better than the day before, just a little bit better. I had a rough day. So it's 6 o'clock at night. What can I do to make the rest of the day 1% better than yesterday? Like, what can I do to just make it just a little bit better, right? And because if you do just 1% better than the day before, you're going to have amazing growth. Guess how many days it takes to double your growth, go from $1 to $2 with just 1% growth? Not that
many. 5-minute warning.
Well, it's going to be less than 100 because if it's 1% growth, that would just be a penny.
It's exponential.
Exactly. So at 1% growth, do you know how many days it takes to double? It is around 70 days. So you got a dollar, and all I'm going to do is do get 1% more and 1% more in 70 days. So what that means is you'll go from $1 to $10 in about 232 days, 8 months. So you're like, I'm barely making it. Well, can you do 1% better than yesterday? I think I can, even after a rough day. Okay, so it's 9 o'clock at night. What can I do to make the rest of the day 1% better than yesterday? And you'll go from $1 to $10 in 8 months. I feel like it's very encouraging. It feels very doable. And when people are struggling, that's great growth. And maybe your growth is just, you're noticing more. I see that's what's going on here. You know, that's the pitfall. That's why my wife is driving me crazy right now, because this is what's going on. Okay, you're more aware. That's growth. So that's going to be helpful. So anxiety, before we get to that, I've been talking a lot. Comments, questions on any of this in our last few minutes?
Just real quick, JD, when you were talking about what to say to a child who was struggling, alligator, what I saw was validation and then coping skills. So that's we all need somebody to validate that what you're going through is hard, even as adults, that this is hard. But then also encouraging them with coping skills, because nobody can do things without coping skills. You have to have those coping skills. Just being that encouragement. One of the best things I heard standing in the hospital room when we were finding out about Dad was big old Tom Day came over to me and gave me a hug and said, everything's going to be all right. And that was the best thing I could have heard.
Yeah.
So just having somebody wrap their arms around you and say, it's going to be okay.
Yep.
It's going to be, and Jesus did that for us.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. Yeah, and doing that with a kid is good because you're not giving them some argument, some thing that they can argue with, mm-hmm. right? But rather a statement of confidence. And of course, you're showing confidence and assertion that's helpful, you know, for them. And so I think that's very good. It all kind of depends on where a kid is at, right? The one kid is coming out every night with worries. They just aren't tired, and they kind of just don't want to go to bed. Okay, that's different than a kid mm-hmm. with legitimate fears. Again, the point is not you just throw the hammer at these kids. The other kid has legitimate fears. So we're going to do some scaffolding. He doesn't know it, but I'm going to say, okay, so tonight, if you get too scared, you can come out and we can talk, whatever, but I do need you to wait 5 minutes first. And then the next week it might be, you can come out and we can talk, but I'm going to need you to wait 7 minutes this week. And you move it forward, and then you can teach them some good skills, some good whatever, and then you're moving them towards, well, by the 13 minutes, I wasn't scared anymore. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay, cool. we knew that was happening. You know, that kind of thing. You know, so, okay, there's a hand in the back. Yeah.
I really like your point about what would faith look like in this situation. For me, that word might be more what would hope look like mm-hmm. in this situation, because often my anxiety leads to despair.
Yep.
So I'm having to combat that with hope. So thinking like, in 5 years, what if the narrative is, wow, that was a hard time, but look how God brought us through and everybody's doing well, versus the picture instead that I painted in my mind of, this is awful, it's all going awful,
yep.
it will always be awful.
Yep.
So I really appreciate stopping to ask those kind of questions. What would that look like? And is my narrative one of truth coming from Jesus or lies coming from Satan?
Yep.
That's really helpful for me to frame it in, I'm being told lies, and I have a choice what I can listen to. So what does God want me to hear right now? What does Satan want me to feel? What does God want me to feel? What does Satan want me to feel?
Yep, absolutely. When we can take our thoughts and look at them, that's huge. Where I can say, okay, wait a second, this is hopeless. I can have hope, you know. And so anywhere where I can be more objective, what the worse a problem is, anxiety, depression, addiction, the more I'm just naturally getting sucked into it instead of being able to look at it, right? I got lost in the sauce again, and I went back to my drug again. So the more I can look at it, that's good, because I haven't gotten sucked into it. And I can say, wait a second, I worked on this morning or yesterday when I was praying or in the Bible. It's like, that's hopeless. I don't have to think that way. And so any of those things are going to be that, you know,
and
helpful.
Not to take away from personal responsibility, but the idea
end
that
of class.
Satan is attacking you in those moments.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so remember, if you want to join in person, you, of course, are welcome to. 2 weeks from yesterday, October 4th at 10:30 a.m. in this classroom, we'll do a recorded class talking about depression. But you don't have to come. You don't have to listen. If you want to listen, it'll be on the website later. But if you want to be in person, that's when we're going to do that, 2 weeks from yesterday. Thank you all so much for the good quarter. Thanks for being here in an unusual class.
Thank you.
Great class.
Thank you.